Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Herman Seyfried from Seyfried Wines in Nelson, New Zealand. How are you, Herman?
Yeah, not bad.
You're Austrian, aren't you?
I'm Austrian born, and I'm traveling with an Austrian passport. Never got into being a New Zealander through and through, but I live in New Zealand for 40 years.
Yep, married Agnes.
Married a New Zealand girl, Agnes. New Zealand is really our home, and then we've got a vineyard there now, and, we have built it up from very small up to 200 hectares, and we're still progressing and expanding and, doing the things what vineyards, when they're going reasonably well, can do.
We're going to talk about VA and sweet wines in a minute and all that sort of stuff, but 200 hectares in Nelson, that must make you pretty much the biggest player in Nelson.
But we have a quarter of the Nelson production is in our own vineyards.
Really?
So Nelson has only 800 hectares of vineyards, and we have over 200 of that.
Are you up the Motueka Hills, or is it on the flat?
We have six vineyards, and they spread from the Mutri Hills over towards Motueka, out to Brightwater on the stony soils, and then also in the Waimea Plains, the sandy soils. So I'm trying to get vineyards in all areas, on all different soil types, different climate zones, so that we are can really do different ripeness at different times, and the different soil give us different flavors. So we are a vineyard that does a lot of blending, and I learned that in South Africa, when you have the opportunity to blend, grapes that have a lot of fond up flavor, or everything is in the nose, most likely there is not much in the finish of that wine, so you need another wine that has more in the complexity on the mouthfeel, on the finish, on the end. And so that's what we really can create with Mutri clay, big in the mouthfeel, big in the finish, long wines, and in Brightwater on the stony soils, we got really everything in the nose, fond up, you open the bottle, you bought a glass, and you can smell it. Yes, that is Sauvignon Blanc or Riesling or Gewürztraminer. So what us the stony soils bring, and then we're blending a lot.
I'm not really a terroirist, but I'm pretty comfortable that apart from porosity and permeability, which is like water flow through the soils and holding capacity, clay gives the wine a bit more texture in the mouth, and sandy soils makes a lighter style of wine. Would you agree with that?
But I agree with all of that. Definitely the heavier soils, the clays, give us a lot of mouthfeel. And extend the wine much longer.
The length of the wine.
The length of the wine. And that is quite often missing in a lot of wines. Today, when you taste them all around the world, you can find wines that are very short, that have all the promises in the nose, but then don't stack up in the mouthfeel and in the length of it.
And the sandy soils?
The sandy soils are probably more middle, in the middle there somewhere, depends on the groundwater level. When the groundwater level is too high, you might get a lot of vigor, and a lot of green characters. What we really don't so much enjoy in our wines, we like to have very low water level, so that we have pretty dry conditions to our grapes, that the grapes not feeding from the groundwater. And then we can control them with irrigation. If they need water, we can irrigate it. And if they don't need the water, we just turn the irrigation off, and then we can dry them out and ripen them, pretty well under control.
I'd never thought about groundwater level. Well, we're almost off topic, but
we'll get
there. This is quite interesting. But I suppose, so you're saying the higher the ground level, obviously the vines can be more vigorous, so therefore lots of vegetative growth.
And you lose control.
You lose control. Okay.
We do want to be like all our total life has to be controlled one way or the other. And we're very fortunate that four of our vineyards are on very low groundwater levels. And those four vineyards really depending on the irrigation. And we can control it. I can say, look, I want to give 2 liter a plant a day in the peak of the growing season, straight after flowering, berry development. We would irrigate 2 liter or 2.2 liter a night to each plant. And then later on, closer to harvest, 4 or 5 weeks at Verrazen, we cut it back maybe to 100 liter a plant there, and then the last 3 weeks we probably shut it off completely, and then see the leaves actually suffering from drought and then showing us those drought symptoms. So long they're not affecting the fruit quality, we think that's the way how we want to produce flavor, extract, complexity.
Okay.
And be in control. I still over very high water level, and the grapes sitting in water, you don't have that. You don't have that. And then you have vintage years, and you got not so good years, and you got pretty bad years.
Yeah.
Where on dry conditions you can overcome that. You can make every year a pretty good year.
Brilliant. Let's crack on with what I really wanted to talk to you about, which was dessert wines. And you've won an award now for the fourth, was it the Decanter Regional Dessert Wine Trophy, is that right?
Yes, that's 4 years in a row we won the trophy. But that we've been into dessert wine since the late 80s.
Yeah.
I personally enjoy dessert wines.
Yep.
Every week, at least once or twice, we open a bottle of sweet wine at home. Not all the time our own, quite often other people's and from other countries. We are trying a lot of other sweet wines. And even as a young fellow when I left the university, dessert wines really, hooked me a little bit to the wine industry. And so we started in the late 80s when there were a little bit of surplus on varieties like Riesling in New Zealand. We found the market pretty tough for Riesling, but I was a very convinced man about Riesling coming from Europe. And so we are going into dessert wine. First of all, with botrytis wine, leaving it on the vines. What I all the time leaned away a wee bit because you're losing control when you leave the vines, the grapes in the vineyards, and then expectus botrytis will make that great expected sweet wine for you. Then we are very soon hooked on ice wine, freezing the grapes. We had Riesling, we leave them hanging quite late in the season. They would have, say, 25.5 pricks.
Yep.
So quite a high prick reading. So they're very, very ripe. And they're shriveling already, the little shriveled Riesling grapes. And then we pick them and we froze them.
Whole bunch?
Whole bunch picking. Anything what has shown any botrytis, we leave hanging, we leave behind or drop it on the ground. We want only clean fruit. We want clean Riesling character and flavors. Freeze the grapes. And the secret is in freezing them very quickly.
So you actually bring them into the winery, into a cold store.
In a cold store.
And freeze them.
And freeze them.
So in Europe, you can't actually call that ice wine, can you?
You're not allowed to call it ice wine. But I mean, that is your regulations and that's great, I admire that, as you can say that. But we are certainly in an industry where we want to move forward, and we all time our eyes, all time the consumer, and we want to make a better wine tomorrow than we make today. And our industry shouldn't stop in grand appearance systems, what 100 years ago has happened. It's nice to read about it, it's nice to hear the story, I think we can do better today. We have technology available to us. And we, even at the present time, we're not using an ordinary freezer anymore. We take the grapes into the city. There's a company that has what they call a blast freezer. Within 3 minutes, the grapes are frozen down to minus 22 degrees. And that certainly was a big step forward for our ice wine, for our sweet wine.
Do you get grapes splitting? Because the water always expands.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, the berries, the skins, because the berries are shriveled, there's plenty of skin there for that bench, we have no splitting at all. But the secret is in freezing it quickly, not to destroy the flavor compound, not to destroy the Riesling flavor in the berries. And then we bring the grapes back to our own cool store and we start pressing the grapes and then, make a create a sugar syrup with a lot of flavor of say 38-40 bricks.
Yep.
And this product then we're fermenting. And today we have a lot of yeast available to us, a lot of new strains like Dipianus, Psychosaccharomyces, the different strains. And some of those strains are very, very good fermenters, what burn very little sugar into energy, creating very low percentage of volatile acid. Volatile acid is acetic acid, what is a byproduct of the fermentation.
We'll talk about that in a second, actually.
But yeah.
The yeast strains you talked about, are they specific for...
For sweet wines.
For sweet wines.
High sugar.
Yeah.
What can ferment at a high sugar level.
Yeah, sweet and wines are very hard to ferment, aren't
they? This is very hard to ferment.
It's all that food, and they just can't eat.
That's right, but I mean, it's so highly concentrated, they actually get dehydrated in the sugar
like
solution.
It's like salt, isn't it? Because
yeah.
Sugar is like a salt. It actually, through osmosis, it draws out the water.
The water out of the yeast cells.
Yeah.
And that's why we need special yeast, and we have those yeasts available today. And we're fermenting now. Like when I was the winemaker in our own setup in the 90s, you know, we used to ferment the sweet wines at 20 degrees or 22 degrees at an ideal fermentation temperature. Now today, our daughter Heidi, what is a winemaker as well, she would ferment them at 14 degrees. You know, much cooler. To me, it is absolutely a no-no. The way how I've been brought up, you know, you wouldn't ferment a sweet wine. But she ferments it through very quickly, with very little byproduct of acetic acid, volatile acid. And that's really the secret to a great sweet wine.
Yeah, we were talking earlier, and you pointed out that a lot of sweet wines have a harshness on the back of the throat that you called as VA. And I've noticed that in some. I always associate with that as a ginger character. I always tell you, oh, this wine's got a bit of ginger.
You sure?
And people look at me like I'm nuts. No, it doesn't. I'm going, well, it sort of has. It's like drinking a ginger beer type thing with that sort of. Is that the VA
Sure, sure.
Is that what you're talking about?
A lot of people are sangrosa because of the high sugar. That where that ginger character comes from. It's not correct. As anybody has the opportunity to taste our sweet Agnes, we certainly don't have that volatile acid level what some of those wines have. You know, we are very proud. We are below 1 gram per liter of volatile acid, what is, you know, somewhere where a good red wine would be, or maybe not so good Sauvignon Blanc, you know. Sauvignon Blanc should have less than 0.5 gram. But some Sauvignon Blancs might have 0.7 or 0.8 of a gram.
What is volatile acid in a layman's terms?
It's just vinegar.
Vinegar?
Straight out of vinegar.
Who is that?
Okay, that's what it is. You know, vinegar is probably 30% volatile acid, acetic acid.
Okay, but when I've had wines that have oxidized and on the road to vinegar, I haven't noticed any of that sort of harshness on the back of the throat.
Yeah, wines, when they oxidize, that's a different type of oxidation, you know. It doesn't produce vinegar later on anymore. It's just a straight oxidation process where the wine goes through. The alcohol oxidizes. Okay, we're talking about a fermentation product what's developed by the yeast, and there where the vinegar comes into the wine. And then our success with our sweet Agnes is that the wines really displays clean fruit, good balance, and no or very, very little scratching on the back of the throat, you know, when you swallow the wine.
And that's the VA. So how does the yeast produce the VA?
But the yeast, the old-fashioned yeast, what we have used, what fermenting at higher temperatures, produces as a byproduct. They burn a lot of energy.
Yep.
And then the burning of energy, the producing the byproduct, acetic acid.
Okay.
And so as you don't burn a lot of energy, sugar away as energy, you don't produce volatile acid either not, or very little.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're just choosing a yeast strain that burns very little sugar, produces very little acetic acid, and that gives a smoothness through the palate.
That's right.
Okay, because I've noticed things like Chateau Equium and things like that, they don't have that roughness there either. Do you think they're using a very similar type of thing?
They're probably working very hard to improve every day like we do and really be up with it with new yeast strains. You know, we're experimenting in our winery with 14, 15 yeast strains each year. That doesn't mean that we're fermenting with each one large volumes, but we're doing a lot of experiment with 5,000 liter tanks, and that is very good for assessing a yeast and say, yep, this is a great yeast. Next year, I'm going to do a 30,000 liter tank with that.
Yep.
Or, you know, we're trying it on our sweet wine, on our sweet Agnes. We're trying each year three, four different geese, some of them with great success, others we wouldn't touch again. So you got to see both sides of geese.
Sure. Okay. Okay. So the VA gets into the wine through the fermentation. You're deliberately selecting yeast strains that don't produce VA and have low sugar consumption. If they're not consuming sugar, that means they're not consuming energy. Does that mean you've got issues with stuck fermentations?
No. Stuck fermentation is another thing. It's obviously too high of sugar and a shortage of nutrients, shortage of nitrogen quite often. You know, we are doing what we're calling a Yen test in the lab.
Yep.
We are going out there and checking our vineyards before we harvest each year. We do nitrogen levels in the soil, and then in the leaves, we are doing what we call a petiole test, leaf test for nitrogen. And we are already, before we start picking the grapes, we say, look, watch out for this vineyard. You might have a problem there. Other vineyards say, look, just don't need to worry. This will ferment nicely. And we are at the point now where we have just no stuck fermentation anymore. The days of stuck fermentation is history.
Is that just poor viticulture?
Better yeast, better preparation beforehand, you know, knowing where you do get your problems, knowing your vineyards, checking the grape juice for nitrogen. Take stuck fermentation seriously from day one before it happens.
Yeah, okay.
Start with a good yeast, start with good nutrients, have the yeast in a good condition, you know, have the right temperature, and then bring it down to a lower temperature where you retain more flavor. You know, and we're fermenting, you know, down still wines like Riesling and down to 10 degrees, you know. 20 years ago, it would have been unheard of. You know, you would have said you're mad. You couldn't do that. Today, the whole winery is doing like that.
Okay, let's get back to dessert wine. Obviously, as a sort of regional trophy winner at the decanter competitions 4 years, you obviously know a wee bit about your stickies. What sort of things should people keep an eye out for with dessert wines? Is there anything you can get a feel from?
But dessert wines, I think you as a consumer, you have to be able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Say, yes, I enjoy it. I want another glass. Or I have seen dessert wines where people made a lot of fuss about it and the price was accordingly, you know, not at the bottom end, you know, you really had to have a major celebration to open one of those bottles because you thought twice about it. And then actually, maybe couldn't drink it because it was so sweet or it was so scratchy on the back of the throat. And everybody talked about how great the wine is, except they can't drink it. Where I think, you know, your glass has to be empty and say, look, hang on, the wine is gone, have you more, you know, and open another bottle. That's the way how we are drinking still wines. That's the way how we should enjoy dessert wines. And obviously it has to be made so that the consumer really can drink the wine, enjoy it, and he wants more.
Who sells your wines in the UK?
But here we meet Shelley Richards.
Shelley Richards.
And just in the recent times, we could bring dessert wine into the EU.
Yep.
So that's a new one for us. And our dessert wine is certainly going pretty strong, and I see it on the stand. A lot of people come along and say, oh, you're the man with the dessert wine, you know, what does so well. And then, you know, a lot of people are lining up to try our sweet Agnes.
Fantastic, fantastic. And what does it sell for in the UK?
Around between 15 and 16 pounds. So, you know, it's not a complete giveaway, but I mean, it's affordable.
It's affordable. And that's half bottle price or full bottle
price?
That
is half bottle price.
Okay, then, Herman. Well, thank you very much, Herman.
No problem. Look, thank you.
Cheers, bud.